Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Congratulations, true crime addicts. We've survived another week. It is Friday, May 3rd, 2024. This week, a TikToker reveals a bizarre middle school cover-up in Kenosha, Wisconsin. New York City may instigate a new Kent State. And police in Washington have solved a 40-year-old cold case. Lots of news for you. Stay tuned.
Yes. Super excited. We are all pumped to have James
Author
Renner.
James Renner.
Suspects that James Renner has zeroed in on.
James Renner's once again drops a bombshell.
Investigative James journalist, Renner. Reporter James Renner, who's been on the podcast. Renner. Long time
by
friend
a local
of mine.
Writer, James Renner.
And welcome back to True Crime This Week with me, your host, James Renner. I'm still here. Thank goodness. Hey, lots to get to this week, but at the top of the show, I want to remind you the Crime Con is coming up at the end of the month, and if you're planning to go, use my name. Give them my name. If you go to the website and buy tickets, put in the code Renner, R-E-N-N-E-R, for a sweet little discount. My glasses are getting fogged up. It's warm here in Ohio. Holy cow. And as always, I want to thank my buddy Walter for manning the camera. He's our assistant producer here. Walter's just back from a wild night at the Chateau Marmont in L.A. where he was hanging out with Britney Spears. Let's get to those stories, shall we? A TikToker out of Kenosha, Wisconsin is reporting on a cover-up in a local school system out there. And the story's quickly unraveling, and I imagine you're going to hear about it in bigger news sources this coming week. But remember, you heard it here first. That's what we do here at True Crime This Week. We tell you the news before you even realize it's news. This is where you get your true crime fix, and you're going to know stuff before your friends. So, you know, stay tuned. So this thing's being unraveled, this story, this cover-up in Kenosha, Wisconsin. Last week, TikToker Brittany Lawton began posting details about 29-year-old 7th grade teacher Christian Enright, who was caught grooming a 12-year-old girl, but has not been fired by the school, and no charges have been filed. Now, this investigation began way back in February, and here's what we know so far. When these allegations, these rumors started, this is at the school K-Tech West in Kenosha, the vice principal Jennifer Seivert did not call police when these rumors surfaced. Did not call police, but did call child services, and they eventually called police. So eventually police get involved, but the vice principal wanted to keep it an internal matter, quote, keep it in-house. Whatever that means. Are we still doing that these days? Anyways, this girl gets called to the office, this 12-year-old girl, and she was asked these questions. And then they let her back to class with her cell phone, where the girl immediately starts to delete messages between her and this teacher. She's scared at this point. Now, according to Kenosha County I, and this is an online news source that has been pulling police records and kind of beating the local papers to the punch on this story. They obtained this police report where Enright admitted to sending this 12-year-old girl Snapchat messages. And some of these messages they found were sent after midnight. The girl told her friend that when she told Enright that she had a crush on a boy her age, the teacher got very jealous. Now, forensic analysis of the girl's phone was done by police, and that revealed 112 images that were, quote, concerning. These images included, well, eventually they do a subpoena for his Snapchat records, and in those records they find photographs of his penis and of him in underwear showing the outline of a penis. This girl also told her friend that the teacher said that he was masturbating while listening to her, talking to her on the phone. Now, the girl later told police that he would also sometimes send photos of himself without pants on. So this is all very scary. Imagine, you know, I have a 12-year-old daughter. I would be out of my mind at this point. So he also allegedly told her that he had inappropriate dreams about her, and in another universe, they would be together. He also said they were in the same boat because he had sex with his friend's mother while in middle school, which could be the worst pickup line ever. Police found 603 messages between Enright and the student that were sent over a six-day period. If you're doing the math, that's more than 100, a little more than 100 a day. The report ends, and the police say that they did not find any content, images, or video that would be deemed sexual in nature. Now, remember those pictures of his wang? That were found, they were not able to determine, they found him on his Snapchat that he was using to communicate with her, but they were not able to digitally prove that he had sent those to her. So this went to the district attorney, a guy named Michael Gravely, and he declined to indict this man. Now, Enright's wife and mother also work for the same school district. Now, his wife is also the girl's new teacher. She had since moved up a grade. And now it's this guy's wife who's her teacher. Now, they did transfer the girl out of that woman's classroom. Now, Enright himself, we found, has had many run-ins with the law previous to this, including a bar fight, leaving a gun on a changing table in a public bathroom, and an OWI. And yet, the school has still not fired Enright, and no charges have come. Now, this, to me, you know, there's all this debate about whether or not we should ban TikTok. This clearly shows the need for TikTok. This story would not have been heard if not for TikTok and wouldn't be generating. You're going to see some action. They're either going to fire this guy or charge him or both or something. But now it's reached that critical mass where I think things will actually happen. But without it, these small towns, they get away with everything. So anyways, if you want to follow Brittany, her handle on TikTok is This Is Motherhood. So you can look her up there, and she reads out the reports and goes into greater detail about this weird cover-up involving a middle school out of Wisconsin. Next story here. This week marks the 54th anniversary of the massacre at Kent State University, where members of the Ohio National Guard murdered four students during protests on campus about the Vietnam War. That happened May 4th, 1970. I actually went to Kent State. I lived in Dunbar Hall, which was kind of right where, you know, catty corner to where the shootings occurred. You can't go to Kent State University without learning a little bit something about this. But apparently, after more than half a century, we still have not learned from our mistakes, because this week saw violent encounters between police and student protesters at some of our nation's most prestigious universities. And the footage that you see online, again on TikTok and other places, is frightening. You know, some of the things the police are doing as they're attempting to remove these students. Hundreds of demonstrators were arrested at Columbia University this week, where students have been protesting against the war in Gaza that has so far killed upwards of 32,000 Palestinians. Think about that number, man. 32,000 so far dead. Students claim that during the raids this week, police were throwing tables and breaking windows, causing far more property damage than the protesters. This according to NPR. New York City Mayor Eric Adams held a press conference on Wednesday in which he blamed outside agitators for the escalating protests at Columbia and New York University. Now, that's the buzzword, outside agitators. Be mindful when you hear that. It's kind of like a cattlebell for right-wingers who like to blame the FBI and Antifa for things like January 6th, for instance. However, Adams is correct that some of the protesters were not current students. Of the 282 people taken into custody at Columbia this week, 134 were not affiliated with the school. And now, that's not necessarily a bad thing, right? I'm happy to join protests here if they happened in Akron. If I heard they were protesting at the University of Akron about something like this, I could go down there and join them, show my support. What's wrong with that? Anyways, the news traveled and goes out, and people in Manhattan hear about this, so they go down to Columbia University and join up. But others are looking to explain away the students' legitimate protest as some sort of organized attack by foreign powers so that they can belittle what the students are actually protesting for. If it's not really the students doing the protesting, we don't have to pay attention to it, right? That's what they're thinking. Many right-wing news sites took issue with a 63-year-old woman who was spotted at the beginning of the protests at Columbia. Nala Al-Aryan is a retired elementary school teacher. She was named by the mayor as one of these so-called outside agitators, and he told the press that her husband had been convicted of terrorism. That's not the full story, of course. Nala is married to Sammy Al-Aryan, a former computer engineering professor who is also a Palestinian activist. Now, according to the Associated Press, Sammy was arrested in 2003 on charges of supporting the Palestinian Islamic Jihad group, but a jury declined to convict him. Years later, he took a plea deal on a lesser charge just to get out of jail, the family says, and was promptly deported to Turkey. His wife, Nala, was on campus this week, but was not one of the protesters who was arrested. She told the Associated Press, quote, "The whole thing is a distraction because they're very scared that the young Americans are aware for the first time of what's going on in Palestine." Similar protests and clashes with authorities this week occurred at Rutgers, New York University, Stony Brook, Yale, and UCLA, to name a few. And I've also heard a new term this week that I love, because I've been searching for a way to put it into words, and I haven't been, but I saw this. The new term is called wish casting, and it sums it up. And the way they use that in relation to these protests are that right-wingers are wish-casting that they'll have a new Kent State in New York, at Columbia University, at Yale, something like this. They want that flashpoint moment where they can point to students crossing the line and police having to shoot and kill these kids. So they're wish-casting that a Kent State will occur. So, and I really think that does happen a lot of times. They're saying, you know, it's that doublespeak. We don't want this to happen, but they really kind of do want it to happen. Last top story before we get to cold case updates, and there are a lot this week. There was a rare happy ending in the case of a missing California teen this week. The 16-year-old daughter of two famous app developers was reported missing April 22nd after not returning to their home in Bolinas. The teen is the child of Stuart Butterfield, the co-founder of Slack, and Katarina Fake, who co-founded Flickr. So this is kind of like Silicon Valley royalty. Luckily, police located the teen on Saturday when they were found inside a white van, inside a white van in the city's sketchy Tenderloin district, according to the New York Post. That van belonged to 26-year-old Christopher Dies Fallow. I think that's how you get the last name. Dies Fallow, who worked as a parking valet. Never trust the valets. As the teen was reunited with their parents, Dies Fallow was arrested and booked into the Marin County Jail on suspicion of child abduction and other violations. He's being held on a $50,000 bail. So, good news in that one case this week. I'm glad they're back home and safe. So, after the break, lots more to come. Some updates in the Gilgo Beach murders that's a little bizarre. A couple cold cases solved. You got to hear the weird news out of Las Vegas. All this and more Stay tuned.
Please hang up and try again.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
And we're back with The Fall Guy, starring Lee Majors. He'll always be the fall guy to me, you know? Police on Long Island spent several days last week using canine units to search heavily wooded areas in Manorville for evidence of murder, according to NBC New York. Manhattan architect Rex Huerman is currently in jail awaiting trial for the murders of 4 sex workers whose bodies were found not far away. He is believed to be the Gilgo Beach serial killer, but hang on. Years ago, the bodies of two other women, Jessica Taylor and Valerie Mack, were found in Manorville, and authorities have said the cases involve at least 2 separate killers. Police with canines were also spotted in Southampton, Long Island, about 30 miles away. An unsolved murder in Southampton has been linked to a man named John Bittrolf. And Bittrolf was convicted in 2016 of murdering 2 other sex workers. And here's the interesting twist. Bittrolf was from Manorville. There's the connection. Now, it's frightening to think, right, that Long Island, in that little 30-mile little radius there, had 2 active serial killers at the same time, focusing on the same type of victims, depositing their bodies the same way. I wonder if they ever crossed paths. They almost had to, if they're operating in that small little community. That creeps me out, the fact that, you know, that they would pass each other in the night. Did they know what the other was up to? That's the big question. So we'll find out if they found anything in the coming days. Police in Everett, Washington made an arrest this week in a 40-year-old cold case murder, according to the Herald. On June 1st, 1984, 42-year-old Judy Weaver walked home from the Belness Cafe, which she owned. She stopped at a local Dairy Queen on the way home for a dish of soft serve, which was kind of her routine. She was seen leaving with a young man. Now, flash forward to later that night, just after midnight, when the fire department was called to her apartment. Judy, her body, was found inside, tied up with a phone cord, strangled to death. Her clothes had been cut off with a knife, and someone had set her bed on fire in an attempt to cover up evidence. Now, that case went cold for decades, but police recently found DNA evidence on Judy's pantyhose and the ligature used to bind her. When they entered that profile into CODIS, a match came back to a 66-year-old man named Mitchell Gaff, who had already served years in prison for sadistic rapes when he used a knife to cut the clothes off those victims. Police discovered that Gaff had changed his name since he was released from prison, and he was now going as Samwise Price. That's right, he took the name of a hobbit. Gaff made his first appearance in Everett District Court yesterday, where the judge ordered he be held without bail. Nice work, fellas. I like those cases being solved with DNA. Every week we get more, and there's one more coming this week too. But first, creepy Nickelodeon producer Dan Schneider filed a civil lawsuit in L.A. Superior Court Wednesday against Warner Brothers, Maxxine Productions, and Sony Pictures, claiming he was defamed by the recent Investigation Discovery docuseries Quiet on Set, according to Deadline. We all kind of knew this might be coming, right? The series claimed Schneider was responsible for a toxic and dangerous culture behind popular kid shows on Nickelodeon. After the show's release, Schneider apologized for some of his behavior in a lengthy interview posted on YouTube. Now, the docuseries revealed that two child sex predators worked on Schneider's shows at Nick, a dialogue coach named Brian Peck, and a former PA named, wait for it, Jason Handy. But Schneider says he didn't know anything about any of that. The series also showed how several of Schneider's shows that he was producing had underage girls in situations that appeared to be sexual in nature, like when he had Ariana Grande squeeze a potato in a really creepy way, and then they poured water on her chest and face. Another scene had Jamie Lynn Spears receiving a squirt of some sort of fluid all over her face. And, you know, that time when Amanda Bynes played a character named Penelope Taint. Anyways, I can't actually see this one going to trial. I think there's too many skeletons in the closets out there. Somebody's gonna settle that, or it gets dismissed or something. I don't see that going to trial. If it does, holy cow, it'll be insane. So I'll keep an eye on it for you. Midtown Jane Doe has been identified more than 50 years after she disappeared, according to Fox 5. A teenager's skull was found during construction of a building in Hell's Kitchen in 2003. That body had been wrapped in a carpet, tied with electrical cord, and buried in cement. The building was once a bar where a lot of rock stars got their start, including Jimi Hendrix. Police detectives used genetic genealogy and connected the girl's DNA to a family member who died during the attacks of 9/11. How wild is that? And that led them to the girl's true identity, which is 16-year-old Patricia Kathleen McGlone, who lived in Sunset Park over in Brooklyn at the time. McGlone was last seen in 1969. Apparently, she was married at the time of her disappearance, even though she was 16. It was a different time, I guess. Police are currently searching for her husband. No shit. And they haven't named him yet. Hopefully, he's still alive when they find him. Over to weird news. This is creepy stuff this week. Police in Sin City arrested 29-year-old Colin Check on Sunday for murdering a man at a bus stop near the Las Vegas Strip, according to 8 News Now. Well, that's not so weird, James, right? Hold on to your butts. Someone called police at 5 a.m. to report the murder, and after police didn't show up for 45 minutes, the witness called back and said, yeah, he's now eating the man's face. The police got there quickly after that and arrested Check, who still had biological matter in his hair and mouth. While he was in police custody, Check told police that he'd been awake for 5 days and that he was being possessed. The police report states the check ate the man's eyeballs. And all this within walking distance of some of the best buffets in the country. Seriously, though, don't do meth, kids. Just don't do it. Over to pop culture. This week's recommendation is, let's call it true crime adjacent. Are you watching Baby Reindeer? Baby Reindeer. If you haven't heard of this, go over to Netflix, fire it up, start watching it, because what the actual fuck? Everybody's talking about this new Netflix series, which is based on comedian Richard Gadd's experience with a real-life stalker. what is that? I think I'm hitting puberty. Anyways, this is based on a real-life situation of a stalker who's stalking this comedian, and it is frightening. Stephen King was even writing about it this week. And the woman the movie is based on started attacking people on social media when they figured out who she was. The whole thing is bonkers. It's getting more bonkers by the day. Here's the write-up. When a struggling comedian shows one act of kindness to a vulnerable woman, it sparks a suffocating obsession which threatens to wreck both their lives. But it's much more than that. I'm not going to spoil the rest for you. Check it out, Baby Reindeer. And for the book this week, I'm going to recommend, that's right, If I Did It by O.J. Simpson. What? James, are you crazy? Hang on, I'll tell you why here in a second. Here's the write-up. In 1994, Ron Goldman and Nicole Brown Simpson were brutally murdered at her home in Brentwood, California. O.J. Simpson was tried for the crime in a case that captured the attention of the American people, but he was ultimately acquitted of the criminal charges. The victim's family brought a civil case against Simpson, which found him liable for willfully and wrongfully causing the deaths of Ron and Nicole, committing battery with malice and oppression. 12 years later, HarperCollins announced the publication of this book, in which O.J. Simpson revealed how he would have committed the murders, under the pretense that his confession was hypothetical. Now here's where it gets fun, because in response to the public outrage when this book came out back then, everybody's like, this is insane. OJ's going to get rich off this book in which he's actually kind of confessing to the murder. Well, HarperCollins canceled the book, and then a federal court judge awarded the Goldman family the rights to the book, If I Did It. And now it's changed too. Here's the new title, I Did It. Thus began one of the strangest odysseys in publishing history. You should read it because the money goes to the Goldmans. So check it out. If you haven't read it already, If I Did It, I Did It by O.J. Simpson. And that's the news for this week. Holy cow. Weird week. It's the weekend now. Weather's wonderful. Go enjoy it before it gets too hot out there, before the cicadas come and ruin it for everybody. The cicadas are coming, people. It's happening right now. And in the words of the incomparable Murray Saul, we gotta. Get down, damn it. True Crime This Week is a Fearful Symmetry production. Photo and artwork are licensed through Shutterstock. If you like the cut of my jib, I have another podcast you might enjoy called The Philosophy of Crime, in which I attempt to solve the big questions behind our true crime obsession by looking to philosophy for answers. Thank you for listening. I'll see you next week. Sit, Brownie, sit. Good dog.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.